blockchain and tokenization holds the potential to transform a lot of what we're doing by removing the need for the middle person, enabling decentralized systems of trust and cooperation. And I think we're at the very start of really understanding where that is going to take us.
There is a big problem that I'm exploring actually with one of my clients is about secure governance, building a secure governance around DeFi, which is very, very important because you need expertise, you need independent bodies as well, and you need enforcement. So there are lots of things to consider. Can regulation and innovation come together and find a common ground to move the financial industry forward so we can embrace innovation in new technology at the same time we have got the right regulatory framework to ensure participant protection? FinTech and RegTech. What is a RegTech? Let's find out more about RegTech. I'm really excited to share this conversation I had with Joanne. She is an amazing woman. She is a mom. She is an author. She's a founder and a leader in digital innovation and regulation. She's the CEO and co-founder of the Alliance for Innovation Regulation. And today we are discussing the intersection of regulation and innovation. Hi, Joanne. How are you?
I'm very well. Nice to see you, Steffi.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the show. A real pleasure. Thank you for accepting the invitation.
Yeah, I'm delighted to be here.
So I know today we are going to discuss the intersection between regulation and innovation, which is a very important point. I mean, especially when it comes down to crypto, but also when it comes down to AI, to find if we can find that balance between, you know, following the rules and at the same time innovate to make sure that all the industry move forward without being pulled back by maybe traditional institution they don't understand, or maybe pull back from a lack of education. That's sometimes I like to think that's the problem. But before we get into, you know, all the details and also what you think, it would be great if you could share your personal journey and your experience that led you to become a prominent voice in the fintech space and, as we said, in the red tech space as well.
Great. I'm happy to do that. So I have worked my whole career mainly focusing on trying to drive for more financial inclusion and consumer financial protection through regulation. I used to work for the United States Senate. I was the first woman to be deputy controller of the currency, and that was my area of responsibility at the OCC, was consumer protection and inclusion. And I've done a great deal of consulting work in this space. And over time, I have looked at the regulatory efforts, and I think they have done some good. But at some point, I also sort of stood back and said to myself, we're not really solving these problems. I've also done a lot of work in financial crime and money laundering, and there I think our policies have been completely failing. The UN estimates we catch less than 1% of financial crime. So I started to get interested in technology, digital technology, about maybe 12 years ago, and began to realize that there was an opportunity for technology to solve problems that the regulation can never solve. And candidly, I also sort of had an epiphany that we were likely to regulate this area wrong, just because our financial regulatory apparatus is not designed to deal with change that's this rapid and this mold breaking. So I decided to work on solving that problem. How do you get regulation right in this period of very rapidly changing technology, both to deal with the emerging new risks and also to try to do things better than we were ever able to do them before?
Yeah, I think you raise a very important point. We are just moving so fast with technology, especially I think over COVID. It's kind of like we accelerate and everything just moves so fast that what you do today in 3 years is not, yes, to be done in another way. I see myself with, you know, running a PR agency, that the way that we used to promote companies has changed so much, and you need to keep reinventing yourself. So it is a very important point to consider. Now, as a woman, is a male-dominated field, what are the challenges that you have faced, for example, example that you had to overcome. And also it would be great if you could give some advice to other inspiring women, even to myself, right? Think about giving some, I would love to have your advice. First of all, to move in a smart way during the career, but also to make an impact in an industry, for example, like fintech, that obviously we said is still kind of like mostly men dominated, but you know, I'm all here.
Yeah, great questions. So finance has always been male-dominated. The tech world is also very male-dominated, and it is a challenge. My career has been going long enough that I remember much worse times when there was overt discrimination against women in the workplace and also in financial services. Things have improved since then, but I was saying to someone earlier today, if you had told me early in my career that we would end up with the Me Too movement happening in 2017, I guess, was when it hit. And we had not only incidents of bad behavior, but we had huge institutions tolerating and covering up the terrible treatment of women in major organizations across the economy. I wouldn't have believed it. So I think that there's progress, but nowhere near enough of it. And I think that a lot of the problems arise from just people's habits and sort of blinders, people not thinking beyond their usual circles or networks to think about how to recruit women for jobs or how to recruit people to speak on a panel and so on. So I think we need a two-sided solution where companies and governments are more proactive in diversifying. But I also think that the women themselves also need to step up. And my advice is have courage, be bold, take risks. There's a lot of research, as you know, that indicates that women are less likely to just confidently put themselves forward than men are. And that's what we need to do. Women need to take risks. And I like to say to them, the chances, if you take a risk, the chance that you'll fail is tiny. And if you do fail, it's probably not going to hurt you. Failure is fine. You know, try things. If they don't work, try something else, but don't hold back out of fear.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about failure today. Somebody asked me that question, and I really think if you don't fail, you are not going to be able to grow. So fail is actually good. It depends how you fail, how you deal with failure. But, you know, thank you. That's such a great advice. Have courage, you know, so all the women listening, you know, just have courage and just do it. It's going to be fine. So let's move into technology and how we shape in the future of financial system. What specific innovation you are looking at that you believe hold the most promise for building a better financial system? I would be interested to understand if you're leaning more towards blockchain or, for example, you know, AI, but I would be really interested to know what your thoughts.
Yeah. So I really think that the transformation that we've entered into is caused by the convergence of different new technologies. It's not one thing more than or to the exclusion of anything else. It's the fact that they're coming together. But the biggest thing I would point to is the combination of the explosion of data in digital form so that we can put it to use easily and AI. Yes, AI, it's a cliche to say it, but it's simply true that it is completely transformative in terms of our ability to do things better. And so at the heart of it, every kind of thing that we try to do in financial services is better if there's more information and a good ability to analyze the information, to model risk, to look at something like credit risk with much more data than the traditional areas like looking at credit scores and credit history that's very limited and doesn't include people who are new to the credit world or credit invisible. I think those are tremendous. And then, yes, I also think that blockchain and tokenization holds the potential to transform a lot of what we're doing by removing the need for the middle person, enabling decentralized systems of trust and cooperation. transition. And I think we're at the very start of really understanding where that is going to take us.
Yeah, 100%. It's funny because, like, I think a couple of years ago, tokens wasn't really a good word. And everybody was, okay, you might like Bitcoin, but tokens, no. And then when all these new wave or, you know, real world assets and tokenization, now tokens, actually people like the word token. It's so interesting how the industry is moving fast. And you mentioned about DeFi, which is also booming of innovation, but is still unregulated. There is a big problem that I'm exploring actually with one of my clients, is about secure governance, building a secure governance around DeFi, which is very, very important because you need expertise, you need independent bodies as well, and you need enforcement. So there are lots of things to consider. Now, we mentioned about blockchaining adding, good benefit to the financial system, but at the same time there are risks that users and, you know, people need to be mindful of. My question for you, as a reg tech expert, how we can strike a balance between fostering innovation from one side and also ensuring consumer protection from the other side, that is kind of like the main aspect that, for example, regulators, the FCA in the UK, are worried about.
I agree, this is crucial. And I think it's particularly acute in wealth building, where we have a lot of laws that are mostly designed to protect an investor from herself or himself. They're meant to keep people out of investing if they can't afford to lose money. And as a principle, that makes sense. But on the other hand, if we consign people to not being able to accumulate financial assets other than through their interest on their savings account, people will not be able to have an opportunity to really join in. So how, you know, what's the appropriate role and type of consumer protection in crypto investing in particular and in all of these new areas? And I think we have a lot of work to do to figure it out. I do think there's a critical role for government to play. And I also think that there's a lot of promise in the potential to expand the use of AI agents to help people make good decisions. And there would need to be a lot of smart regulation of AI agents so that they would have to be designed to be devoted to the best interest of the investor or the consumer. But our financial marketplace is so complicated. I mean, classic economics theory is that an evenly knowledgeable and powerful buyer and seller negotiate prices and terms and come out with an optimized solution. In financial services, we almost always have asymmetry between the buyer and the seller. And I think we should be using AI to help the consumer or the investor weigh more factors and get more clarity on their options, find hidden terms that are potentially harmful to them. You know, the people say finance is too complicated for AIs, but I think there's truth to that, but it's more true that it's too complicated for human beings, and we should use AIs to help us.
You just mentioned something super interesting about using AI agents to help investor, you know, during the investment process. I think that's a very important thought, because if we think about it, like, investment is driven a lot by emotion, right? And people make emotion because they think something is going to happen, because, you know, they read something about it. And sometimes being able to be more clinic, right, in your decision, or be more, you know, not be driven actually by emotion, you can actually make a better investment in the long term. You know, when you are, that's why there are stop losses, and that's why there are all these mechanisms. So I think taking the emotion away from an investor, I think that would be a good thing. So maybe that's what AI agents should focus on. Is a great point, Anne. There is another aspect that I want to bring up, which is banking. That has been a problem for many individuals, for many investors, for many companies in the crypto space, which were basically have been unserved by the banking industry. Even here in the UK, we got some banks, they basically close account of many users because they were dealing with, you know, Binance or Kraken or Coinbase. So how actually do you see see the legal banking sector innovating and embracing crypto? How should bank maybe approach crypto if in a different way, or what will be, you see actually a positive development?
So we are clearly in a volatile regulatory and market landscape with crypto. And it's been kind of a wild ride, hasn't it? Over the last few years, we've had booms and busts and scandals and shifting public policy, shifting marketplaces. So if you're running a bank, obviously you've got to follow the rules and you've got to stay within reasonable risk parameters. Having said that, if I were running a bank today, I would be forward-leaning on crypto, because I think so much of it, crypto and also broadly defined digital assets, blockchain, tokenization, DeFi, the whole frontier there. Because I think if you try to put your head in the sand and pretend things aren't changing, that can become risky also. So I don't have a specific answer on exactly how things are going to unfold short or long term, but I do think that we will not see these innovations going away. They're going to continue developing. The regulation and law is going to catch up with them, start to bring more clarity to what is allowed and what isn't allowed. And that'll be a messy process, but in the end, we'll have a marketplace that's benefiting from these new technologies, I think.
And hopefully, as the industry is maturing and, we see less FTX type of a situation, I think even regulation can be more comfortable in integrating this new asset class.
One important aspect of that, too, is the crime issue. Getting really good at pushing out financial crime from the crypto space, which obviously has had issues with that from the early days. And there's a lot of work to do in terms of identifying people and making it possible to trace crime. If you can't be sure that there are ways of dealing with crime, it's going to keep the space smaller in terms of its role in the mainstream financial market and in terms of banking. But if we can, again, get clear rules of the road for how to use data, how to clarify identities, when and how it's appropriate for law enforcement to understand who is doing what, that's central to financial services, and it's going to be something we'll have to work our way through with crypto.
Yeah, and do you think also AI, this is also a place for AI to help modernizing financial regulations?
I do, absolutely. I think AI is one of the secrets to it, partly because it's so good at looking at finding patterns, right? And looking at possibilities, using trial and error to identify issues way beyond the resources that we have as humans.
Great. You mentioned about identity, and over the last years, I've done a lot of work on sovereign identity and digital identity and all this kind of, very deep discussion that actually we haven't got an identity standard yet for, Web3, for decentralization is still all. There is a lot of experimentation, but nothing yet that everybody kind of decided to onboard. And digital identity is really crucial for financial inclusion. So how can we leverage a digital identity solution to bridge the gap and make sure that the underserved population can get access to financial services? And also, what role regulators can play to promote these practices?
Yeah, great question. My organization, AIR, the Alliance for Innovative Regulation, is doing a multi-year project on digital identity. I should say we're also doing a multi-year project on AI, and we're going to have an AI white paper out in the next couple of weeks, maybe sooner, looking especially at consumer financial protection and AI. But on digital identity, there's so much opportunity to solve problems if we can get better at it. As you say, it's crucial to financial inclusion because all over the world, there are literally hundreds of millions of people who can't easily prove who they are. Women in particular often have that problem because their government may be issuing identity papers to the head of household and not the individual. It's also crucial to how we're going to build better privacy protection and data security for people in these increasingly hazardous financial markets that we work in. And thirdly, it's critical for financial crime and anti-money laundering. And there are people all over the world working on digital identity from those individual standpoints. So we have a project that is working on kind of bringing them together across these silos and figuring out what's the state of the technology and methods, what are the most important use cases, and then what are the gaps, what needs to happen to foster better adoption, more widespread adoption of digital identity, which is the future. You know, in many parts of the world, people have trouble getting into the payment system at all because they can't identify themselves. In other parts of the world, like the United States, we've had identity systems that worked pretty well for a long time. Most people can identify themselves, but now they're all insecure, aren't they? Our information is for sale on the dark web. So we're going to need better control, technologically driven control. And as you say, also more self-sovereign identity, more ability to share information that doesn't involve handing over your whole passport or your whole driver's license to somebody who really only needs one data point from it. So there's just a tremendous amount of work going on in this space. And I'm optimistic that we'll see tremendous progress in it because a lot of resources are going in over the coming years. And I think once we do, everything else will get easier. We've been saying it's like a skeleton key. It can open a lot of different locks that are impeding innovation today.
Yeah, brilliant. There is definitely lots of innovation going on. I also think there is still lots of education as well. Not many actually understand. They might understand the concept of financial inclusion and the challenges, but not much about what self-sovereign identity is. What does it mean also to empower myself to actually share data in a way that is decentralized? So it's deep discussion. And that brings us to kind of the last question about education again and collaboration among stakeholders to progress. How we can foster better collaboration among these stakeholders, so that, I mean, founders, industry leaders, policymakers, investors as well, which investors play a big role because they are the one, you know, fueling the progress of certain type of companies, and educators to drive progress in an innovation in financial services. And perhaps also if you are following or know some specific initiatives or forums that has been successful in doing so.
Yeah, so I think you're ending with what may be the most important point, which is to make good progress with these innovations, including fostering good innovation and also countering dangerous change. The most important thing is more collaboration, more sharing across silos, breaking down silo walls and getting people to work together, particularly in my world, between the regulators and the tech world. In the United States, our tech center is, as you know, in Silicon Valley, and our government center is in Washington, D.C., and there's 3,000 miles between them. In the U.K., you've got more natural overlap among your players because there, you know, so many of them are in London. But that getting people together, getting beyond the difficult sort of bureaucratic or rules-driven walls that impede dialogue. I mean, there's have to be walls between regulated entities and their regulators, obviously, but we need much more working together on problem solving. We need more labs and sandboxes and pilot tests and experiments. We need more collaborative projects where people are putting their minds to the same problem at the same time. And one of the things that my organization does is tech sprints, which were invented by the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK. And we brought in actually the FCA's former head of innovation, Nick Cook, is now our chief innovation officer. And we've put on at AIRA about 20 tech sprints. And the magic of them is you get the regulator, the industry, the subject matter expert at the same table with software engineers and designers talking about, can we build a prototype of a solution instead of just having white papers and discussion? You know, why don't we try to build something that maybe could work and then carry that forward. And it's a really powerful tool. And I just think we need much more of that in every direction across the globe, geographically, between the public and private sector, between regulators in different countries, everywhere we are, we need more collaboration.
Yeah, it's a good point, like across geography, across industry, across nations. I think that's, and tech sprint are great. I mean, after the FCA started to do, I think it was 2021 or 2022, they start the first crypto sprint. I started a series of private event called the Crypto Circle, where I was trying to expand on the crypto sprint. I was inviting, I'm still doing them, founders, leaders in crypto and digital assets, together with policymaker and investor, and discuss, you know, it's an evening where we have a discussion about different kind of topics. We done, you know, the state of crypto was the last one, and then we have done blockchain plus AI, and it is really great when you can get people in the room. But like what you said, having the engineer with the regulators actually discussing, that's quite powerful, because the engineer wants to build something and he's not, you know, he's not maybe the CEO or the spokesperson of the company, is really the one that actually is doing the tech. So it's quite, it's quite powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell you, regulators and policymakers do a great deal of work where they think there is not really a solution to the problem. They think maybe you can improve on it marginally, but some things are just always going to be impossible to solve. But they're not aware of some of the technology solutions that could be brought to the table. They don't have exposure to it. So getting that border broken down is really a key thing.
Yeah, indeed. Joanna, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been great to have you on, very refreshing, and some really great insight that I'm sure our viewers are going to appreciate. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.